Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on the MMR vaccine. We've been saying all along that it was highly problematic and it had been associated with a lot of neurological damage, including autism. But everyone in American science, it seems, is aligned with the official denial. No, it's not. Well, we were right. I'll tell you how in a court of law that was found. Processed foods. 9 things you need to know about the food you eat. Also, organic food can turn you into a jerk. Where'd that come from? Oh, I see. From psychiatry. Because they believe if you're interested enough to be determined to buy organic food, there must be something wrong with your brain. Because you're one of those people that are highly picky, and that's clearly a brain chemical imbalance. So at least those of you, along with me, because I'm probably then this super jerk, we're all jerks, according to psychiatrists. And they've even published an article on it to make it official, of course. You can't have someone called a jerk unless it's official. So we are all official jerks for being interested in our health. And so it goes. And you wonder why I challenge psychiatry? Oh, yeah. Well, I have a response for him. Today we have commentaries. I set aside one day a week to do as many commentaries on important projects as possible. For example, from Science Daily, I'll be talking about severe nuclear reactor accidents likely in the next 10 years, according to the latest study. Also, let's end polluter welfare from Bernie Sanders from Op-Ed News. And today's environmental influences behavior generations later on, how chemical exposures today are going to affect people later. Also, from Professor Peter Phillips, desperate times demand revolutionary measures. Here's one that I'm sure some of you will find of interest. This is from Common Dreams, How the Ultra-Rich Betray America. Time permitting, and from John Scales Avery, the benefits of inequality. Benefits for whom? I thought we got benefits from equality. We'll explore this from Countercurrents. My guest in the second part of our program in 15 minutes will be one of the more profound thinkers on the planet. He is Professor Paul Atwood. He is the interim director of the William Joyner Center for the Study of War and Social Consequences. He is a faculty member of the American Studies Department at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He specializes in U.S. foreign relations and social history. He is also a member of the Smedley Butler Brigade, the Boston chapter of Veterans for Peace, and he is the author of War and Empire, The American Way of Life. This is an interview you should let people know now. Coming in 15 minutes, you won't want to miss this interview. So as you see, we have a lot to deal with, and I try to select themes each and every day that are not getting the attention they deserve. Now, for Michael Savage, who I was listening to last night, and also for Mark Levin and Sean Hannity and all the rest who believe in American exceptionalism, tomorrow I'm going to do a special commentary on what's exceptional about and then I'll fill in the blanks. It will have a different perspective than theirs. Let's go to the issues. As many of you know, that for decades, those parents, pediatricians, nurses, scientists, who even suggested that there could be a link between vaccines as individual vaccines or combinations, that there could be adverse effects, they were hammered. They were considered against science, against public health. They were considered health deniers, none of which, of course, was true. When you speak to as many parents as I have of children who were completely normal until they received all these vaccines and then lost their capacity to grow as they should have, and then everyone denies it had anything to do with the vaccines, and going through a torturous process, a complete bureaucratic nightmare to find resolution, so at least you can be helped, because if you have a child that's autistic, that child requires 24/7 care for the rest of their lives. Well, how can you do that if you're a parent? You have to go to work. That means you have to hire someone. A regular person cannot take care of an autistic child. So needless to say, there's a lot of liability that could be costly if someone had to acknowledge they were wrong. So there's been denials. Well, a couple of new findings is that the person who the CDC and the FDA and all the pediatricians were claiming, he's the expert, he's the one who did the studies, found it, this man is a fraud. He's on the run from the law. He's under indictment. Well, so there went their credible witness. Then they said, well, there's no evidence. It's never been proven in a court. Well, we have 61 cases that have actually been awarded multi-million dollar settlements by the United States government because of brain-related autistic associated damage from vaccines. So clearly one section of government's not talking with the other. Here's the latest. This is from the NYR Natural News staff. Quote, an Italian court has ruled there is a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. MMR stands for measles, mumps, rubella. In what may be a groundbreaking decision, the Italian court of Rimini has ruled that causation between an MMR vaccine and the resulting autism in a young child, quote, has been established. The child received the vaccine in March of 2004 and on returning home immediately developed adverse symptoms. And during the next year, the child regressed, receiving the autism diagnosis 1 year later, and is now 100% disabled by the disease. The Italian court ruled that the child, quote, has been damaged by irreversible complications due to vaccination, prophylaxis, trivalent MMR vaccine, end quote, and ordered by the Ministry of Health to compensate the child with a 15-year annuity and to reimburse the parents for their court cost. The judgment can be found in full and we're posting it on our website. By the way, that's not the first judgment against the vaccine. It's the second recent judgment to come to that conclusion. Earlier this year, a U.S. court also ruled that the MMR vaccine caused autism. In a ruling that kept very quiet in the press, the U.S. Court of Federal Claims has conceded that the mercury-based preservative thimerosal, which was in vaccines until 2002, caused autism in the case of one child. That ruling was just one in 4,900 cases currently being considered for compensation payments. So I think all of this is important. So for 30 years, all of you who have been challenging the safety and efficacy of vaccines because of what they can do to infants and adults, you were on the right side of history and science, but you weren't on the right side of power and official denial. Now, we all know that eating an organic diet is better. We also know that eating food that's locally grown is better because you have less distance that a plant travels. A head of lettuce grown in Mexico or Argentina that's sold in the United States, in New York, that's thousands of miles and many days, sometimes a week and a half to 2 weeks before you even get it. So locally grown, in season, low carbon footprint, fresher, more antioxidants, and you're supporting biodiversity at the local level. Well, thanks to factory farming's massive economies of scale, which is monoculture, a lot of food today is, well, it's just overprocessed. It is not fit for human consumption. And we have had a lot of food scandals in the United States, but unfortunately, people forget and go back to what they're used to eating. Here are some things you may not be aware of that you are eating for two simple reasons. One, because the major agri corporations pay huge amounts of money to lobbyists to get their top people into positions at the USDA and FDA to protect their interests. And two, they're the number one advertisers of food on television. So there's really no one's advertising for organic apples. Here's what you should be aware of. The bovine growth hormone. It's in milk. and the recombinant bovine hormone injected into dairy cattle to increase milk production was created by a cross-cow DNA and an E. coli bacteria. Yes, that's the E. coli that you can get sick and die from. So according to Martha Rosenberg, AlterNet, from the very start, farmers and veterinarians worried about the utter infections it causes and the resulting need for more antibiotic usage and more than what most people would ever end up having. Now, if you've ever been on a farm, and I have had the good fortune of living on farms and ranches most of my life, and I was responsible in the summertime for going out milking the cows, and there were 24 cows. And you wash off the udders, and you wash your hands, and then you milk into a sterile bucket, and there we didn't do anything more with it. Sometimes it was pasteurized, sometimes meaning just heated, sometimes it wasn't, but it was never homogenized, so you always got this thick cream on top, which is really delicious. And I'm sure some people in this audience can actually remember buying milk that had the cream unpasteurized on top. After some serious cases of infected milk, meaning from one cow from one farm could go into a vat with 10,000 cows from, let's say, 1,000 farms, it's all it took to infect the whole lot, hence the pasteurization process. But that's before they did testing at the farm and then at the dairy, at the refinery. Now they do that with all the milk, and therefore you know what you're getting. But people don't know that they're getting this bovine growth hormone. Now, anytime you had an infection, let's say a cow's outside and it's late afternoon, and her teat is way down at the ground. It's dragging. It's like a potbelly pig in the evening. In the morning, stomach's flat. They sit around and eat all day. In the evening, that belly's dragging the ground. Then they're going to scrape the ground. Maybe there's some briars, maybe some thorns, and it gets in their teat or gets in their milk sac, and it gets an infection. That infection is called mastitis, and immediately you stop milking that cow because you don't want any of the infection, which is pus, to get into the milk, and then you put whatever medicine's necessary on it to heal it up. We always had a colloidal silver pack that went on there, silver pack, and that did a lot of healing. But each farmer does something different. How would you know if you're getting pus in your milk today? You wouldn't, because it's white like milk. So in effect, when you're drinking milk from today's cows, which are, I'm not talking about the organic grass-fed cows, I'm talking about these commercial cows, you end up with all types of drugs in the milk, and including the bovine growth hormone. And it contains in that, you know, it contains all kinds of problems, pus, and a protein associated with increased prostate and breast cancer risk called IGF-1. Still, people think it's safe and healthy. Okay, so the next time you go to have a glass of milk, just imagine that you look down and there's a pimple. Would you drink it then? I don't think so. Then we got eggs. You think about eggs. By the way, for homesteaders, one of the best things you can do if you have a garden is you get chickens. Why? Because they'll go around and they'll eat off all the bugs on the leaves of the plants, and then they'll scrap the soil and with their nice little claws, and they'll dig out the worms, not the worms, but they dig out the larvae and all kinds of insects and they eat them. And then if you eat eggs, they'll give you a fertile egg. If you don't, you can sleep. And then at nighttime, they go into their chicken coop. You close the door until the next day, and they start all over again. Nature's natural insecticides. But that's not how it's done today. Today, it's done like 7 or 8 chickens in a tiny little cage. And then they give them all kinds of chemicals to make sure they keep dropping the eggs. Well, do you remember 2 years ago, there was a salmonella outbreak caused a recall of 500 million, that's 500 million eggs, and it caused 1,600 illnesses. And thanks to factory farming, with thousands of hens stacked over their own manure, egg operators are festooned with germs. In fact, the government found both Tyson Foods and a hatchery injecting eggs at future laying hens preemptively with antibiotics to avert infections. So just remember, when you're getting the egg today, you have no idea what's in that egg. Salmonella? Okay, you could get that. And then there's a drugstore virtually in the meat that you buy. Now, you may not have heard of Fort Dodge, Elanco, or Intervet. These are animal divisions of Big Pharma. But you may well be taking their drugs. Government safety inspectors miss residues of penicillin and other antibiotics and parasitic and anti-inflammatory drugs and heavy metals in beef all the time. In fact, last year's Office of Inspector General report allowed contaminated beef into the food supply. And for other toxins like dioxin, lindane, and fire retardants, and inspectors do not even have to establish action levels to test for. Four plants with an astonishing 211 drug residue violations were given a pass. All right? And worse, unlike germs like salmonella or E. coli, drug and metal residues aren't neutralized by cooking. So you think by heating up that pork chop or that steak that it's going to get rid of the toxins? Not at all. And then, of course, you have to look at free antibiotics in our food and water. One of the late Senator Ted Kennedy's last legislative fights was about the overuse of livestock antibiotics. And he had seen that as really a problem. Well, the fact is that as high as 70% of the antibiotics go to livestock, not to people. And that's then it goes from the animals into our soil and into our streams, and that's not good either. In fact, reports say that almost half of Midwest hog farms harbor the antibiotic-resistant germ MRSA, and 64% of workers carry it. Are people who don't eat meat and drink water from the tap safe? Guess again. Crops themselves can harbor antibiotics, and siphoning them right up through the soil. And then you have to take a look at your meat inspection method. Once upon a time, federal meat inspectors visibly, looked at carcasses, checked them. But under the hazard analysts and critical control points implement of 2000, all supported by Big Agra, inspectors now simply ratify that companies are following their own self-created systems, as in, trust us. We have your interest at stake. And soon after this, 80% of inspectors surveyed said that this law had limited ability to be enforced and the public's right to know was virtually zero. So when a meat gets through, do you know whether or not that meat has been contaminated? Well, here's the bad news. 62% of inspectors said they allowed contaminated feces, vomit, and metal shards in food on a daily basis. So that goes from the meat into you. And a couple more here. We have to understand that they're putting a lot of growth promoting chemicals because they sell animals by weight. And so you'll get hormones. Some European countries actually boycott US beef because of hormones like trenbolone acetate, which it says are linked to prostate and breast cancer, but not here in the United States. And remember mad cow disease? Well, it's back. Does anybody remember the government's misinformation and ineptitude with the three mad cows? Now that the disease is back, with the first cow, the government report said, quote, potentially infectious product had been disposed of in a landfill by the San Francisco Chronicle and the Los Angeles Times, so it went to the California restaurants where it was eaten. That's very different. With the second cow, authorities did not even realize it had mad cow disease for several months. The government's final report says the farmer who sold the cow was, quote, relatively sure he had not kept any offspring, but not absolutely sure because he had no records. Want more reassurances? The ranch was cleared to resume selling meat within 1 month. And now we have all these clones. So that's one of the reasons why, when you're eating processed food in the United States, you really don't know what you're eating. Therefore, organic is better. Oh, and what I mentioned about organic, yes, they're now suggesting from the Loyola University in New Orleans, from the associate professor in the Department of Psychological Sciences, that people who, quote, there's a line of research showing that people who, pat themselves on the back for their behavior and selection, these are really just self-righteous people, and they're not normal, and they're not mentally healthy. So there should be a diagnosis. Too interested in your health syndrome. So, quote, organic food can turn you into a jerk. No, it can't. All the people I know who eat organically do so because they have educated themselves as the consequences of eating processed foods. They're concerned about the environment, animal rights, and or for spiritual reasons. So you're going to call the Hindus jerks, the Jains jerks, those Buddhists, though Buddha himself initially was not a vegetarian, but later was, jerks. You're going to call all the Seventh-day Adventist jerks. You're going to call all the physicians who themselves are vegetarian and eat organic and care about food. You're going to call 70 million Americans who buy organic and go to farmers market. You're going to call them jerks because they're interested in health. Why couldn't you do the opposite? Why couldn't you say that shouldn't we all be interested in the healthy choices that we make because there's a good outcome possible for them? But I don't hear you calling the mothers and fathers that feed garbage to their kids that cause diabetes of adult type 2 in their children and heart disease in their children or morbid obesity in themselves. I don't hear you calling them anything. So they're normal to be obese, to be sick by preventable diseases, to drink, to gluttonize, to eat processed and genetically engineered food. That's normal. But be interested in your health is not. Why should we be surprised? Obviously, our process of selecting healthy food represents a viable economic threat. So I would expect nothing other than them to put together through their scientists for hire and their think tanks ways of making people question, do you want to be one of those organic jerks? Or do you want to be a real American? That's where we are. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you, I'm Gary Nall. And also to Ricky Duffy. Ricky, I got word of your email. Can't read my own website till tomorrow when I get back in the city, but thank you for suggesting to the people you know on your Facebook that you're taking one day a week to go meatless based upon a suggestion. Quote, I got this idea from your show yesterday, and I posted on my Facebook page. Perhaps you could do the same or something similar. I want to start a grassroots campaign today. I'm going to ask that every one of my Facebook friends take a simple pledge that is that they will not eat meat one day a week and will make the same request of each and every one they know. That would be fantastic. You bet it would be, Ricky. Thanks for joining in. My guest, I mentioned earlier in the program, Professor Paul Atwood, an author of War and Empire, is one of the most profound thinkers on the subject of war and peace, and someone you do not see in the debates. I wonder why. Let's find out. Professor Paul Atwood, nice to have you with us today.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Let's take a look, because I'm putting you right in the same category as Morris Berman and Francis Boyle and Peter Dale Scott and Tom Englehart and Chomsky and others who are looking at war at the consequences to our character, our morality, our ethics, and how easy it is over a period of time when you have constant propaganda by ideologues like the Bill O'Reillys, who say that we are only engaging in exceptionalism. And then you have the embedded journalists who go off to war and come back showing our valiant troops. Never once did they show the children born of defects or the hospitals filled with phosphorus exploding devices. We only show half of it. So that said, Right now, the U.S. has been expanding its military operations well beyond Iraq and Afghanistan. We saw Libya and now Yemen and Syria. There are clear signs of increasing our military control in Africa, and then our aggressive posturing towards China with new bases in Australia and Philippines and North Korea. Yet for the majority of Americans, this is all glossed over. The anti-war movement, aside from getting out of the Middle East, is remarkably small today. Now, you've written that American foreign policy, the government, and the corporate media propagate a collective hallucination. Would you define and expand upon that and so outline the larger ideological picture and the strategy that this plays into the role of America believes itself to be playing in global affairs today? The forum is yours.
Well, the culture of exceptionalism has to be cultivated, and it's cultivated exceptionally well and in a very sophisticated way. You know, and the advent of mass communications has certainly facilitated that. And, you know, our mass communications are really run by corporate media, whose loyalties are largely to the powers that are really running American foreign policy and, you know, to a great extent, domestic policy as well. I think all of us, see that, at least the people who tune into your program see that. But most Americans don't. They simply accept it. It's a part of everyday reality to them.
One of the main issues about the so-called war on terror is that it is perceived as a permanent war. However, we can really say that permanent war has been a part of American domestic and foreign policy for a long time. In fact, you see that war rather than peace as an American way of life. So take us in depth on this war on terror as a permanent war and differ from earlier imperial adventures to take control of resources in other countries.
Well, the idea of a permanent war economy, the term goes back to World War II. When the czar of war production, who had been the CEO of the General Electric Company, Charles Wilson was his name, used it. Well, in 1944, when it was clear that the U.S. was going to emerge victorious, although that really had been clear from the very beginning. But in 1944, Electric Charlie, as he was called, began to wonder about the return of 16 million GIs. Would they be facing bread lines again, as they had been only a few years earlier? He understood that war production had put 16 million people in uniform and provided them with three meals a day, and put the rest of the working population back to work. So he said, what we need is a permanent war economy. To have a permanent war economy, you've got to have permanent enemies. And in this case, the immediate permanent enemy became the Soviet Union. Now, remember, the Soviet Union had been an ally of the United States in World War II against Nazi Germany. The United States allied with a regime that was as bad as, if not worse than, Hitler's Germany. And Hitler couldn't have been defeated without the aid of the Soviet Union, without the overwhelming contribution of the Soviet Union, really. I mean, think. In reality, the Soviets defeated Hitler with the aid of the U.S., not the other way around. At any rate, on one day, the Soviet Union was our ally, and the next, virtually literally the next day, the Soviet Union was our enemy, and the same sort of threat to world peace that it had been claimed that Hitler had been. So the collapse of the Soviet Union in the early 1990s, brought on a real crisis. So no sooner had the Soviet Union collapsed than we had a new Hitler, as the first President Bush said, namely Saddam Hussein. And, Osama bin Laden has filled that role, or had filled that role for some time, and Al-Qaeda still continues to fill that role to some extent. None of these were ever an existential threat to the United States, certainly not in military terms. But all of them posed a threat to, you know, corporate control around much of the world. And, as I said, the sophistication of mass communications, mass propaganda, really, has convinced the bulk of the population that, you know, we really are endangered by all of these.
When you take a look today at many of the social movements, the one movement that is lacking is an anti-war movement. We did have one big day, in fact, the largest single outpouring of demonstrators in world history on one day happened in 2003 when we were opposed to the war in Iraq. But today, if you ask people who are actually paying a high price with their social services being challenged or lessened or eliminated, when you see the breakdown of our infrastructure, when you see the way that we are being victimized because of our going into the Iraq and Afghanistan and other countries, why don't, from your perspective, why don't we have a mass general strike where all the unions, the school teachers, the social workers, the people who claim to be for the people, but don't seem to be willing to put themselves on the line when it comes to be against war, and by extension, neocolonialism, which is an extension of that war, and the policies of these major corporations. If you're against the 1%, then why aren't you out there protesting? Because the 1%, many of them, create the military-industrial complex system of over $1 trillion a year. Why aren't we rallying and protesting?
I drive myself crazy every day with that question. You know, I'm one of the first things I think about is the fact that I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought. Would you back up a bit?
Why are we not protesting the war, the wars?
Well, it really is a source of great frustration to me. You know, I belong to an organization called Veterans for Peace, and we're out there quite a bit. We'll be out there on Memorial Day down on the waterfront of Boston trying to get the tourists to participate in memorial services for those who've been killed in the wars, you know. You know, most people don't really have any connection to the war directly. A lot of your listeners would obviously know that the sheer cost of the wars is, you know, a prime reason why we can't fund education, why we can't cure unemployment, and so on and so forth. But if you go back to the beginning of the Iraq War, more than half of the American population believed that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9/11. You know, I was just having a conversation with someone about the origins of the Vietnam War, or at least of the full-scale assault that began after 1964 in the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, the Gulf of Tonkin incident. That was based on President Johnson's lie that the North Vietnamese had attacked the American flag on the high seas. It was a lie, but most Americans believed it. You know, I believe that Johnson interrupted the soap operas that afternoon to say that, you know, the commies had done us wrong. And polls taken the next day said that about 90% of the American population believed it and marched in lockstep in support of the war. It wasn't until 30,000 people were killed, 30,000 Americans had died in Vietnam by 1968, and the draft was reaching into the middle class, that people began to reassess this, and gradually, you know, opposition to the wars increased. Interestingly, most Americans polled now believe that that we should get out of Afghanistan. But the government isn't getting out of Afghanistan, and, you know, nobody's, you know, certainly... I mean, if you look at what happened in Chicago the other day, it was gratifying to see thousands of people in the streets protesting the, you know, the relationship that we have with NATO, which has nothing to do with the North Atlantic. But, you know, it's pitiful, really, compared to what's needed to stop these things.
Those weren't your average Americans. Those were
That's true. Those
were young, idealistic individuals who've had enough of the corruption, ineptitude, and intellectual insolvency of both the left and the right. They went out there and did something, and they were preemptively arrested against the law.
Yeah.
Another thing no one seems to be paying attention to, where the police in Chicago and the federal agents were stopping people, arresting them, photographing them, interrogating them, searching them without due process or without a warrant, and yet not once did anyone say, how could you get away with that? You have protections. You have rights. Well, we might have had protections and rights, but I don't see those who value the Constitution out there protesting. And so I don't think that we're going to see this at this time. I'm just very concerned. And that's why I like to hear other people's opinions of why we're not doing anything. We're not even paying attention to what's going on. You want to know something? You know the bad thing about 70% of people being against the war in Afghanistan now? Because they're illiterate. They don't know what's going on in Afghanistan. They couldn't find it on a map. Because we're not winning it. But if you won that war in Afghanistan, you'd have 90% of the people supporting it. So when we lose it, it makes us feel bad, and you have people arguing what it does to our image and our exceptionalism with all this military might. Shouldn't we have just obliterated them? We love violence. We immerse ourselves in this heroic notion that we're the ones planting the flag, not just on an island in the Pacific. We're planting it everywhere we go.
Well, I mean, you think about all the violence that, you know, is on the American movie screen. The people who love violence are the ones who've never really experienced it. And that's the vast majority of Americans. You know, you mentioned the violations of the Constitution. You know, the Fourth Amendment gives us the right to be free from unreasonable searches and so on. But, you know, think about the Supreme Court ruling. In the case of a citizen who committed a trivial offense, and he was strip searched and so on, and incarcerated without any real charges against him. Supreme Court has upheld effectively
correct.
the obliteration of the Fourth Amendment. What's next? The First Amendment?
You know what might get people's attention? I was thinking about this driving yesterday. What if the President of the United States and his Joint Chiefs and a joint session of Congress got together and say, look, we've decided to expedite getting out of Afghanistan, but our problem is not getting out. Our problem is how much do we have to pay the people in Afghanistan for us to be able to leave their country? We have hundreds of billions of dollars that they've been getting and profiting from insider and corruption, and we can't just leave that. We have to make sure that those people who have been corrupt are taken care of. So from Karzai, the little moral degenerate, and all the rest, we have to give them how much? And we need your support. Should we give them $100 billion, $200 billion, $1 trillion? But we have to take that from somewhere. So we're going to take it away from your school programs. You won't mind. You haven't protested yet. We'll take, and suddenly the American public starts seeing how the money is spent. Who's it going to? Preemptively, we're going to select our money, put it aside, so all these corrupt politicians, are there any other? And all these stupid little places, are there any other that we end up engaging in? That we are co-complicit in, these are nothing more than a series of bribes because there's no democracy. Now, you show that to the American public and you say, okay, now, how much should we give these people, these criminals, these corrupt people, to get out of their country? Then let's see how many people say, what are you talking about? Well, that's what we've been doing up this time. What do you mean? Well, can you pull yourself, can you take your head out of your, for a second, and take a look at the world you actually live in?
Right.
Your thoughts, please.
Well, I'm as frustrated as you sound, but, you know, the only thing I can think of to do is what you're doing and what I try to do all the time, is keep, you know, hitting on these things and trying to convince people, you know.
A lot
of people are just embedded in their daily lives and, you know, the circumstances of their lives and, you know, don't want to look beyond it, I guess, you know.
Well, don't look beyond it and guess what's going to happen to them.
Yeah, right.
All right?
Exactly.
1922, 1934.
We're drifting towards that, exactly. I agree.
Okay, so at some point you can live with denial that you are a part of the world or its consequences. I believe in voting for third-party people. I don't believe in voting for the two-headed monster that we have there now that belongs to one body. But ask the average person who they're going to vote for, and the registered voters, 41% say they're in, 50% now say they're independent. You never hear a word about why they're independent. You only hear about support for the two existing systems because they represent control and protection of the media and those in power and the corporations they're associated with at the very time that the American people are being exploited every way you can. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your points of view. And And finally, one last comment. What do you think when Obama was given the Nobel Prize? For two things primarily, a hope that he would bring peace to the Middle East, and yeah, why don't you ask a Palestinian who's living in the largest apartheid outside prison about that? And second, the hope of his representing truly green environmental efforts that would be sustainable. Well, he's done that, hasn't he? He supports at $90 billion last year. Nuclear? That's green. Clean coal? Hey, rub it on me. It's got to make me cleaner, right? And natural hot gas hydrofracking? We should put one of those gas hydrofracking right in the White House lawn. What a better way, beside Michelle's little tiny organic garden, to show that he is really there with the people. Your final thoughts.
Well, he'll probably approve the pipeline from Canada to Houston, too. Not to make America less fuel dependent, because from what I've heard, the Canadian tar sand oil is going to go to be sold to Asia. He was elected on the strength of his promise to end the wars and you know, his promises about green energy and so on. But he had to have known the desires of the people who were paying for him to get elected. So my guess, my certainty really is that he was being mendacious, to put it kindly.
I would agree with that. Sir, thank you for your good work, especially this new book, which is a must-read, War and Empire, The American Way of Life, by Professor Paul Atwood. He is the interim director of the William Joyner Center for the Study of War and Social Consequences. He's frustrated. I'm frustrated. Many of us are frustrated. But we're frustrated because of an immovable object, the American consciousness, stuck in one channel, the official channel for entertainment distraction. All these reality shows, this is the opium of the masses today. And that's unfortunate, because when you're in one of those stupors of denialism and avoidance, nothing good is going to come for those people. For the rest of us, yeah, we're doing a lot of good stuff and a lot of cooperation, a lot of going forward. And if there's only 100 or 1,000 of us or 5,000 in the demonstration, at least we're honoring higher principles. The day may come when they realize how important those principles are to them when they get searched, when they are suddenly have someone throw them up against the wall or get them on the ground. They say, what? I haven't done anything. And the trouble is, yeah, you're right. You haven't done anything. Back in a moment. Welcome all of you from all over the world. We have a lot of people listening in to our land-based terrestrial stations, a lot more, about 1,000 times more listening over the internet from everywhere in the world, and also now listening by telephone. If you don't have a computer or you need to listen over the phone, you can. You can call 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. Now, a series of quick little comments on different topics, then we're going to go to your calls for your feedback section. Tomorrow, I'm going to be dealing with some major commentaries. The whole show outside of health nutrition, no guests, commentaries. You won't want to miss that as well. Challenge, because science is being attacked in the United States. This is from the Union of Concerned Scientists, as short. This was a letter to my producer, Richard. What are pharmaceutical, biotech, and medical device companies trying to buy with $700 million? Massive influence with our government. That's the amount of money these companies spent over the last 3 years lobbying Congress and the executive branch, which includes the Food and Drug Administration. And now, with negotiations underway on legislation that will govern how the FDA approves and monitors prescription drugs and medical products, it's clear that all that money has bought the industry a lot of influence with our legislators. So they're concerned that you buy access, which is true, and then the access allows you to buy loyalty, even more true. So just be aware, until we have the courage to take every nickel out of all elections, state, federal, and local, we will not have a democracy. Well, we don't have a democracy. We're supposed to have a republic. We want to have an it. Now, as far as nuclear, I had Dr. Carl Grossman on the other day talking about how dangerous the nuclear situation is. Well, let's add something to this. This is from Science Daily. This is mainstream science, and this is a major statement from a research team led by the director of the Max Planck Institute of Chemistry in Germany. It says this: catastrophic nuclear accidents such as the core meltdowns in Chernobyl and Fukushima are more likely to happen than previously assumed. Based upon the operating hours of all civil nuclear reactors and the number of nuclear meltdowns that have occurred, scientists at the Max Planck Institute for Chemistry have calculated that such events may occur once every 10 years. Whoa. And that means that it's 200 times more likely to have one of these accidents in the future. Well, that's not good. So when they tell you that it's green, it's not. When they tell you it's safe, it isn't. And now an independent group is saying there's going to be a lot of them. So just be aware of that. Now, from Bernie Sanders, let's end, and this is short, important, let's end polluter welfare. Now, you heard me mention this several times, that I have a program that will take $3 trillion, that's with a T, trillion, dollars of expenditures and eliminate them each year, and have another way to put $3 trillion in if we just all pay our corporate taxes at a fixed rate with no deductions. You can't offshore it, you can't write it off, you must pay it. Between those two, you would eliminate $1 trillion out of the defense budget, and also the pharmaceutical tear up and throw out the Obamacare, which is a complete and total fraud. By the way, latest information this morning shows that there were secret meetings between Rahm Emanuel and Obama's people who were the architects, himself included, in multiple meetings with the head of the Pharmaceutical Advertising Council representing the pharma, and they had givebacks. These were secret. We were never told about these. And that's why if the government is giving $1 trillion over the 10 years in profits to the pharmaceutical industry by not having less expensive generic drugs if you needed one for a hospital, for VA, for Medicare and Medicaid. It was all big scam. It's time that we realize what the scam is and start with a real health care program that actually involves health. How about that? That prevents disease, never done that before, that looks at the most efficient and effective way to treat a person. Well, that would be new. That looks at why does it cost $1,200 to spend a night in a New York City hospital with nothing except a sheet? You could spend a night at the Waldorf Astoria luxury hotel for the same price. To find out why it costs all this, it's all about profit. And we haven't been honest about any of this. So we have to get this. So here's Bernie Sanders. He says, quote, "At a time when we have more than $15 trillion in national debt, American taxpayers are set to give away over $110 billion to the oil, gas, and coal industries over the why? Because the five largest oil companies made $1 trillion in profits over the last decade, with some paying zero federal income taxes for part of that. They certainly didn't need that. It is time we in this corporate welfare in the form of massive subsidies and tax breaks to hugely profitable fossil fuel corporations. It is time for Congress to support the interest of the taxpayer instead of the powerful special interests like oil and gas. That is why I join with Congressman Keith Ellison to introduce legislation in the Senate and House called the End Polluter Welfare Act. Our proposal is backed by grassroots and public interest organizations, including 350.org, Friends of the Earth, Taxpayer for Common Sense, and many more." Good for you. Good for you, Senator Sanders, independent from Vermont. I would certainly support your efforts at getting rid of all subsidies for all major corporations. How about not just stopping with polluters of fossil fuels? Get rid of everything. Not a nickel to any corporation. How about that? If they can't succeed, let them fail. Oh, it's not what they... Well, hold on. Isn't that laissez-faire capitalism? You know, you got to let us have no regulations so we can succeed. Well, you've had no regulations and you failed, but we subsidized, socialized your loss, and you privatized your gain. How stupid do you think we are? No one should get a penny in corporate America. You fail, you fail. Go out of business. Learn your lessons. But don't ask those of us who benefit not at all from subsidizing your failure to keep you back in business, to keep you profitable, to keep you rich, and keep you buying more legislators' favors so this cycle never ends. The entire banking system should be replaced in our society with credit unions and savings loan only. If every single corporation on Wall Street failed, it wouldn't affect the rest of us at all, but we've been led to believe it would. That's the lie they keep perpetrating. From Dennis Kucinich, this is short, but he's the only one who said this. NATO talks are a sham. The war in Afghanistan is not ending. Quote, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, is not a benevolent organization. NATO is not the North Atlantic, and it's not about our collective defense. NATO is a cost-sharing organization that finances aggressive military action by hiding behind the claim that the organization provides for our common defense. NATO allows us to wage wars of choice under the guise of international peacekeeping. The most recent example was the unconstitutional war in Libya, where NATO, operating under a United Nations mandate to protect civilians, instead back one side in a civil war in pursuit of policy of regime change. Today, NATO leaders are meeting to discuss the future of Afghanistan. The talks are behind closed doors and are being billed as discussions to end the war. The war in Afghanistan is not ending. These talks are simply about financing the next phase of the war. He is right. I'm Gary Nall. Let's say hello to David from New Rochelle. Hi, David.
Hi there, Gary. There's this one site that begins in theextinctprotocol.wordpress.com, but it's way too long for me to read the whole URL. It begins with a piece of news about 3 days ago. There was a 6-magnitude earthquake just in the same place the other one was, at Japan, and then another URL at the same basic place. There's a 2.5-hour Russian movie about Chernobyl, and it is beyond belief. And the pictures with the color stuff coming out of the top of it's beyond belief. And tell me, who do I send these URLs to at your place so okay. They can go on your website?
All right, simple enough. Just send them to Attention Myron. At GaryNall.com. Myron, or Progressive Radio Network.
I don't say Myron at Gary, I just say Attention Myron.
Attention Myron. Just go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.org or .com, and he will be able to give you, he will post that so everyone listening can watch it, okay? All the best. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Amazing information, as always. You know, I was listening earlier in the show, and you were talking when you were talking about the nutrition piece, and just a quick story. I have a patient who I work with about 3 or 4 months ago with end-stage colon cancer, and as I always do when I work with people, one of the things I had mentioned to him, I asked him what kind of work he did, and of course he was a cattle and pig farmer, and that's how he made his income. So what was interesting was when I explained to him the type of lifestyle he would have to follow, he became almost indignant with me that when you challenge people and the way they think and you tell them to do healthy things, if it means losing money in their work, he wouldn't hear of it. It was very, very interesting. But you're absolutely right about how, you know, we can put the truth right out there, right in your face, and people will still not do what they should do to help themselves, and that's unfortunate. Anyway, I have an email here from Yolanda from Washington, D.C. She says she was a longtime listener to KPFW in Washington, D.C., and she noticed that about a year and a half ago that you were no longer there. And when she calls the station, no one can give her an answer as to why you stopped doing the show. So she wants to know, is there a backstory to this, and why did you leave KPFW?
It's WPFW, not KPFW.
Okay.
I left about a year and a half ago for a simple reason. I had had a lot of challenges with the station management sending premiums out on time. They told me that premiums had been sent out, and I trusted them. And then one day, Luda in my office showed me that they were just now sending out some premiums only because she wouldn't send them new premiums until they had sent out those. And I said, well, when was it? And she said, a year ago. I said, you mean all the people who pledged didn't get their premiums for a year? She said, that's correct. That was it. I said, I talked with them. I said, we have to have a discussion. They didn't want to talk. We had no discussion. And so I chose to let it go. I couldn't be a part of that. And that would be true anywhere else. If there comes a time anywhere where my presence, my audience is not appreciated, we'll graciously say goodbye because we have a place where we are very much welcome and we honor our word. And I believe that I don't know what's happened since. I certainly hope that they do well, learn some lessons from all that, and go forward. But I haven't been in touch, so I don't know. Okay?
Okay. I probably got it mixed up because I also have an email right after that one from someone from Los Angeles, Karen from Los Angeles.
That's KPFK. I was just on there 6 hours today.
Yes. She says she and her friends listen every single week. And she actually saw me on PBS last weekend when you were in, says you were in Denver. And she also, I think you may have even addressed this already. She was very, very curious. She says she works in the medical field, and she often tries to influence people where she works. And the question keeps coming up, are all the statements in your films vetted for accuracy?
Yes, they are. I found that out about 14 years ago when, actually it was over 20 years ago when my first program ended up on PBS. We had to have enormous amount of documentation and independent documentation from experts in the field. And we can thank Mr. Tatum, the publisher of the Amsterdam News, and Doug Henderson, a lawyer who did articles for the Amsterdam News, for seeing that that process was brought to their attention. So, yeah, they showed it. But later on PBS, when I did my special on How to Live Forever, we had to have, I believe Bob Marty had 20 to 25 separate independent medical and scientific experts verify every fact. And since that time, with 20 additional specials on the air, every single documentary, every single program that is done that goes to the public must be independently vetted for accuracy. Now, they can't tell me if they like the material I'm saying or how I'm presenting, but they can't keep it off the air if, as long as it's true. If I say that we need 30 to 50 grams of fiber a day, I have to be able to support that. So all my statements and all my documentaries and all my films are vetted first by scholars in the house, top scholars, that's all they do, and then outside experts, and then independent medical experts, and or it doesn't get on the air. It just simply doesn't get on. So, yes, everything is vetted.
And by the way, Gary, I had a physician call me the other day, and he asked me, how can you just, you know, tell someone to just eat, you know, fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds? He says, you don't even know what's in these things. Well, to remind everyone, the Clinician's Handbook of Natural Healing, that's my go-to book when I'm dealing with professionals in my field. Because it's all right there. You have what's in every single fruit and vegetable and all of the studies that back up all over the world that back up their use in integrative medicine.
Well, all you have to do is look at the several hundred vegetarian medical doctors, all board certified, who themselves are models of health, and then who they work with their patients using the very techniques and foods that they themselves take in, and these people get better. Neil Barnard in Washington, one of the brightest doctors in America, helping thousands of people, and yet he's a vegan, and so is Dr. John McDougall. McDougall has had successes that very few physicians in American history have had, and he looks 20 years younger than his age. He's a vegan. I just finished filming 30 of the top medical doctors in America who are vegan for a new film I'm doing. Now, the better question to ask is, and the, I think more appropriate one for a physician, would be to say, I don't have the background or the scholarship in this field. I haven't read the tens of thousands of studies that you have read that show that there's a connection between the quality of the food you eat and the beverages you drink and the processing of disease, the pathogenesis of disease. Could you give me some resources? Could you show me? Then we could give him the textbooks written by Dr. Alan Gaby and Jonathan Wright and myself, the Clinician's Handbook, which has 25,000 peer-reviewed references per nutrient showing you what it does, and the courses taken, given by doctors to doctors, and the 500,000 studies and peer-reviewed literature proving what each of these nutrients do, just vitamins and minerals, let alone the thousands on resveratrol or SI or quercetin. So it's how you approach it. If you approach a topic that there couldn't be any truth because you're not aware of it, that's hubris and arrogance. And then you have to reverse it and say, doctor, could you give us a list of every patient that you've worked with for cancer or heart disease who died under your care or became worse? And then can you show us how many that you saved based upon your care? And then see how quick they are to begin to defend their own practice. See, as long as you keep on the aggressive in orthodox medicine and you keep everyone in the alternative field making them feel as if they're orphaned from the truth, then you have them always apologizing for healing people as if you have to genuflect every time you walk by a doctor's office. Well, hello, we didn't kill a million people last year with our practices. They did, between 600,000 and 900,000. So I think that we have to reaffirm the right of the holistic clinicians in this country who've taken the time, the scholarship, to learn beyond their traditional studies what it really means to help a person in the healing process. That's what the question should have been. Clearly, this person didn't have enough fiber the night before.
Well,
thanks a lot,
exactly.
Luann. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen, and we look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.